believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight is a professional vocalist, inspirational speaker, certified personal trainer, songwriter, and author. She's been the favorite national anthem soloist for the Detroit Tigers for over 20 years. Most importantly, she's the mother of 11 children, 2 biological and 9 adopted from 4 different Russian orphanages. She and her physician husband, Jeff, do not have a nanny. Her name, Lori Adams, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now here's Jack.
We're with the professional singer, songwriter, author, mom, Lori Adams. Lori, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. My mom and dad's name are Frank and Joy Adams. I grew up in Riverview, Michigan, and I'm from a family of 6 children. There's 5 girls and 1 boy. I'm the middle child. I had a great childhood, great life, great upbringing. Went to Gabriel Richard High School, and had a really good time.
What did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from your dad?
Well, I think probably the most important thing I learned from my parents was unconditional love. And as a matter of fact, in my book, I dedicated my book to them. And I thank them for that, because that's really helped me in my life as a parent now.
You talk about unconditional love, and you sure have that today with your 11 children.
Mm-hmm.
Lori, what is unconditional love?
I knew you were going to ask me something like that, Jack. Unconditional love is, for me, just loving somebody regardless of their mistakes, regardless of the choices that they make. And, you know, as a parent, I do experience that, and I did learn that from my folks. It's just a very important part of life.
You became a professional singer at age 16.
Yes, I was 16.
Where did you get your love for music?
Well, I have to tell you a little story about my family. My family is very musically oriented. My oldest sisters and I, the 4 of us actually, when we were little girls, we formed a group called the Adams Sisters, and we would often sing at different churches around the area, around the Downriver area, and it was really a fun thing. That's kind of where I got my bug for music. But when I was in high school, I was introduced to, you know, I made many friends that were in the music thing. And my very first band, our very first, you know, job was to play the school dance. And we played the same 10 songs over and over and over. And that was when I was 16. And actually, my older sister, Lisa, is a very wonderful vocalist. She's a really beautiful singer. And she had gotten the lead in the school play. And I thought she was so good, I thought I should try out for that too. So I did. I tried out for the school play, the school musical, and as a sophomore, I got the lead role, which was usually, you know, for seniors, and I was actually able to capture that, and that just catapulted the whole singing career.
You're 16, you're singing, so you had a lot of confidence. So many teenagers today, they lack confidence, self-image.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
How did you get this confidence?
I think it's just because I loved what I was doing, and I found that it was something that I could do well. You know, I found something that I could do that I liked, that I thought I could do well. And people responded to this activity. So that was great for me. And one of the things that I'm noticing about teenagers today, and even with my own children, is the busier they are, the less trouble they get into. So it's really important to expose children to as many positive things as possible and activities to keep them very busy. So I was very busy in high school. I worked, and I was, you know, singing with a band and in the play and in clubs and AB student at school. I was very busy. It was really a good full existence.
We've been doing this show for almost 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and one common theme that the guests talk about is taking risks in life. Talk to us about taking risks.
Taking risks. Well, maybe I should tell you about some of the risks that my children take, that my children actually took. My husband and I, as you know, adopted many kids from Russia. The risk that we took was taking on older children from an institutionalized setting, not knowing what the outcome would be, whether they would embrace our family or not, whether they would embrace American life or not. The risk that they took, imagine this, imagine being 13 years old, living in an orphanage for most of your life, coming from an abusive neglect background, and then making a decision to go with someone that you do not know, you've never met, you can't speak their language, and you're going to go to a completely different world. To me, that is huge. That's a risk, and that takes a whole lot of courage to be that age. But, you know, a lot of my children will tell you at that point in their lives when they had that decision to make, they figured it was worth the risk.
Let's talk about your mate, Jeff.
Well, Jeff is an emergency physician at Mercy Memorial Hospital in Monroe. He is a wonderful dad, great guy. He loves to work around the house. He loves to work on our farm. We are actually raising some alpacas, and he really enjoys that. He is, he's been coaching our kids for many, many years. He's really involved in our church, which is St. Charles in Newport. He's an all-around good guy.
How'd you meet him?
I met him on a singing job, actually. I was working two jobs at the time, and I had to sing a hospital, I think it was a Christmas party for a bunch of residents, and he happened to be there. He was there with a date. She was just a friend, apparently, but she went to the bathroom, and he approached me, and, you know, I gave him a card, and the rest is history. 11 kids later.
Is it his choice to have all these kids, or was it your choice?
Actually, it was our choice. We had some fertility problems early on in our marriage. And then we had two miracles. We had Daniel and Mitchell, and we had always talked about adoption as an option for us because we love kids. Both come from pretty big families, so we wanted to have a big family. So, you know, we both just decided when Daniel was two and or Daniel was four and Mitchell was two, we decided to pursue adoption. And we looked into several different things. First, we looked into a domestic adoption here in the United States, and we were told because we have biological children that we would have to wait at least 6 years for an infant. Then we looked into the foster parenting situation, which is a wonderful program, but ultimately they would like you to send, you know, give the child back to its birth family once they get their lives together. And, you know, we just were not prepared to be able to give the child back. We wanted to be a forever family. So we looked into foreign adoption, and that was our very first one.
When we come back, we'll continue talking to Lori Adams about how they came to adopt 9 children from Russia. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
Welcome back. We're with Lori Adams, the singer for the Tigers of the National Anthem for 20 years.
Yep.
Lori, you and Jeff had to have doubts about whether you should adopt or not. How did you overcome those doubts?
Well, I think one of the things that I was most anxious about was whether I would be able to really connect with someone else's child. I mean, ultimately, I never spoke of it. And that's why I wrote the book, because that is essentially what the book is about, how I was able to form that connection and how that all progressed and how that the journey that I took and that the emotional journey that I took. So, interestingly enough, you know, we talked about some of the needs this child might have, maybe the medical issues this child might have. We had to fill out a lot of paperwork you know. And through the course of filling out a lot of the paperwork with your home study, and it's called your dossier, which is about a, you know, 3 inches thick paperwork, they ask you a lot of personal questions, and it really makes you, you know, contemplate, wow, this is a big decision, and this is going to affect the rest of our lives. So one of the things that was difficult for me was, and I wrote about in the book, was the medical question there. What would we accept? What would we not accept? Part of me, it was a struggle because, you know, my husband's a physician. We definitely have the means to take care of someone that has some severe medical issues. But then I thought about what would my, you know, what would my life, what would our lives be like if we had someone, for instance, that was, you know, bound to a wheelchair or that had some serious medical ailments. And so I was constantly at a battle with myself about that, wondering what's the right thing to do. I wanted to do the noble thing, but then I ultimately decided to do what was best for us. And we chose, you know, we filled out the questionnaire. We said as healthy as possible because that's what we want. So and that's those types of questions, you have to really be honest with yourself because that's what you're going to get. You know, if you write down, yes, I will take someone that has a serious ailment, that's probably what you're going to get. So and it's, when I talk about special needs, a lot of these kids have been institutionalized for a long time. So they are going to have delays. Many of them can overcome their delays. Many of them cannot. So it just really depends on the individual and the child.
You went there thinking you would get one child.
Yes.
Well, you ended up getting nine.
Right. Well, it's really a funny story because we originally wanted to put it in God's hands. We were open to sibling groups initially. That was one of the questions on, you know, within our home study is, would you be open to sibling groups? Would you be open to, you know, what are the ages that you would consider? So we were open to sibling groups, and boom, all of a sudden, we get a call in February that twins have been born, and would you accept them? So we raced home. We were actually we were out of state at the time on vacation. We raced home, saw the video, fell in love immediately. I fell in love with them immediately. So we accepted them as our referrals, twin baby boys. And they are now Kevin and Craig. They're almost 10 now. It's amazing.
And that's what the book is about, Fresh Paint, A Memoir for Adoption.
That's right. The book is about, it's our story of adopting our very first babies, Kevin and Craig.
Between 98 and 2003, you go back a number of times.
Correct.
And each time, you get another one or two.
Yes. About after we adopted Kevin and Craig in July of 1998, a few months later, my husband, you know, we would receive periodic magazines from our adoption agency. And at the end of the magazine, the last few pages, is a section called Children of Promise. And these are children that are available to be adopted. Many have special medical needs. Many have special needs because they're older, harder to place. My husband saw a picture of an 11-year-old girl named Eula, and he fell in love with her. Now, he is a very right brain, direct person. He's very black and white. I've never seen anyone, you know, respond this way to a picture. He actually took her picture out of the magazine and put it on the refrigerator, and I would walk into the room and he would be staring at it. It was just the most oddest thing. And he said, "We really need to adopt her." And I said, "You're crazy. We have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and twins, 4 under the age of 5, and there's no way I can take on a 12-year-old girl who doesn't speak the language. We don't know anything about her. We don't know her background. This is a huge risk. What do you think?" "I don't think we can do it." And he said, "There's 3 things that I'm sure of. Number 1 was medical school. Number 2 is you. And number 3 is her. I'm positive we need to do it." So after much prayer and a lot of book reading, a lot of research, we decided to adopt her. We went to Russia. And at this time, we met 100 kids in her orphanage, many older kids. We did adopt Julia. We named her Julia, which is actually the English version of her Russian name. She had the choice because she was 1 month shy of her 13th birthday by the time she came to us. We found out that she did have a brother in another orphanage. When we were visiting her orphanage, which was called Velika Vechnia, which is near the Black Sea, it's in the Krasnodar region, we found out that she had a brother, went to his orphanage, which was a different orphanage completely. He was near Chechnya. We met him. They hadn't seen each other in 3.5 years. It was a very, very emotional reunion for the two of them. We decided to adopt him as well. So we had met her, many of her friends at Velika Vechnia, went to this other orphanage where James was. Zhenya was his Russian name. And we adopted him. Well, we get Julia home. 6 months later, Jeff decides to, you know, we were able to travel back to go pick up James and adopt our son. I opted to stay home because now we had five and I just needed to take care of things at home. So Jeff went alone. Well, during this 6 month period between Julia coming home and us going to get James, I was thinking about this blonde girl that I had met named Ira. She was very sweet, 11, 12 years old, beautiful smile. And she just kind of got into my heart, and I just could not let go of the memory of her. So before Jeff left, I asked him to go back to Velikovechnya, where Julia was from, and to check on Ira's status, just to see if she was even adoptable, just to see what was going on with her. And he did. He did. And the woman that was a huge help to our family, she facilitated most of our adoptions with our older kids. Her name was Olga Spachel. And Olga was driving him to the orphanage, and he was telling her, well, my wife wants to know about this girl, Ira. So Olga says, okay, we'll go to the orphanage, but I have another orphanage I need to drop off some documents at, if you don't mind. Well, this was a place for toddlers. This place was called Otradnia. So Jeff went in with her, a little girl. Her name was Elena Smirnova. She was 5 years old. She had a beautiful little black and white dress on. She comes into the room and completely stole his heart. So after he talked to Olga, he thought, wow, this little girl is beautiful. So needless to say, I called him that evening and I said, tell me about Ira. What's her status? He says, oh, she's adoptable. And guess what else? I met another one. I said, what? So 1 year to the day that we adopted Julia, we were back in Russia. 1 year to the day we were back in court adopting Ira and Elena together. Well, wouldn't you know, Ira, the blonde girl, has a brother in yet another orphanage. So, of course, we had to go visit him as well. So when we met Dennis, or Denise was his name, Dennis, we decided to adopt him as well. Now, his paperwork was delayed over a year. It wasn't our fault. It was the fault of the Russian, you know, policies and procedures over there, because things are not computerized. They live in a very different world there. So our documentation was lost for a year. Within that time, we had given several talks to different church groups and civic organizations telling people about the kids that we had met. So during this time, there was several kids that we had met that we were trying to find homes for. One of them's name was Zhenya. And another one was Kola. So after talking and talking and talking and people not responding, or some people did respond to Zhenya, there was actually two families that were going to adopt her, had even started the process of adopting her with the paperwork, and then for whatever reason, stopped the adoption. They just couldn't adopt her for whatever happened. So we just said, let's just take them. We just really, you know, feel a need to adopt these two particular kids. Let's just take them ourselves. So a year later, we went back, adopted Zhenya, adopted Dennis and Kola, Nicholas, at the same time, six months later. So within a period of a few years, we went from 2 to 11. So it's been an amazing story.
Lori, most wives won't let the husband go to Vegas because of the fear of what happens in Vegas.
I know. Well, you know what? He only went to Russia alone once, and after that, I had to stay with him because God knows who he's going to meet. You know.
When we come back, we'll talk further about what it's like raising 11 children. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible with Lori Adams on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Lori Adams, professional singer, and her band's name is Cassin's Murphy Band.
That's right.
When you have 11 children, they regularly let you down.
It happens.
How do you handle that?
Well, I think in any family, children are going to disappoint. God knows I disappointed my folks, and they still love me anyway. So, you know, the older they get, the more mistakes they tend to make. And it's my job to keep them safe, teach them understanding, teach them patience, teach them to be responsible citizens, love them unconditionally, no matter what. teach them the importance of family, you know, things like that. I will tell, you know, what I do tell my kids, and I'll tell you a little bit about, I don't want to go into too much detail, but all of my adopted kids have come from abuse or neglect, a situation. In Russia, alcoholism is huge. Most of the children that are in orphanages in Russia are products of alcoholic parents or drug abusing parents. The kids that live in the orphanage that are adoptable, the parents have either relinquished their rights or the rights were taken away from the parents. So there is no parental rights. They are orphans. So many of my older adopted kids remember their families. They remember the early years living in an abusive situation. Then they leave that to go into an orphanage setting, an institutionalized setting, which oftentimes doesn't have the proper nurturing, the proper staff, you know, available. So think Lord of the Flies. I mean, you know, it's just an unbelievable situation. And many of these kids live in this for years and years and years and years. So what I tell my, what I've always told our kids, think of your life in terms of being a book. You can't change what happened in the first couple of chapters. You know, you can't help you who your parents are. You can't help some things that might have happened to you when you were little. Those are the first chapters. You can write from now on what your next chapter is going to be. And the future chapters are going to be up to you. But there's going to be different characters that come in and out of your book, in and out of your life. For instance, the first few chapters of your life, you may have your birth mom, your birth dad, your uncle, your aunt, somebody, a neighbor. Maybe a good experience, maybe a bad experience. And one of the things that I've learned is that I have been a part of their book of life. I might not be all of it, but I was there for a reason. I think God wanted me to step in when I did, and I'm glad that I did. So, and that helps them to kind of think about what they can ultimately choose for themselves, for their book, for their own book. If that makes any sense to you.
About a month ago, we were having lunch together to prep for this. Mm-hmm. And 3/4 of the way through the lunch, I said, Lori, talk to me about this Wonder Woman, your nanny.
And I laughed, didn't I?
Yes, you laughed.
No, we do not have a nanny. We have a system that my husband and I developed that everybody has a rotating schedule. Okay, we've got, right now, actually, we're down to 7 kids at home. And people think, oh my gosh, you're down to 7. But to me, that's just, you know, big deal. 7, it's a vacation. So, you know, there's 9 of us that live in our house. And we have a pretty large house and, you know, lots of property. So we do have a rotating schedule. And this really does work for us. Every week, the kids have a different job for that week. For instance, 1 week, someone will have to clear the dishes from the table and wipe the table and put the extra food into the Tupperware. Maybe another person will have to sweep the kitchen floor after dinner. Maybe one person will have to do the laundry for that week. Maybe one person has to take out the garbage that week. One person has to feed the animals. So then they, and then every week they switch. So this gives everybody the opportunity to do something different, and it's very fair, and everybody knows how to do it. When our children go into the second grade, I teach them how to make their own lunch. Because I started out by making all of their lunches. And then it got to be, well, Mom, I don't like mustard on my sandwich. And Mom, I want cheese on mine. And I thought, okay, it's time for you to become independent beings and make your own lunch, and you're old enough to do it. So they all know how to make their own lunch. All of my kids know how to do laundry. They all know how to dust properly. They know how to vacuum. They know how to change the sheets on their beds. And I think it's very good for them to know how to do these things, because eventually they're going to be on their own and they're going to need to know how to do it. So it actually does work for us. If I didn't have a schedule like this where everybody did their own job, I would be working nonstop. I wouldn't be talking to you right now because I'd be cleaning.
You'd be dead.
Yeah.
You have tough love. You have to have tough love.
Yeah.
A lot of parents in the suburbs today, they want to give the kid everything they never had.
Mm-hmm.
They want to protect the kid.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say about that?
Well, you know, everybody's different. Every family dynamic is different. And, you know, you do have to have tough love. I think what happens to a lot of parents is, especially when the kids become teenagers, they want to become their child's best friend because they can feel the child pulling away. It's a natural thing for a child as they become an adolescent and grow into an adult to be independent. So they're naturally going to start to pull away from their parents and that bond. It doesn't mean they don't love the parents. It's just sometimes the parents feel like, oh, I better, you know, give them this, give them that, be their best buddy so that I don't lose the relationship. You know, everyone is different in the way they parent their kids, and I am absolutely no expert. I have made a lot of mistakes that I regret.
What's the biggest thing you and Jeff are trying to teach these 11 children?
We just want to teach them the importance of family. We want them to be loving, responsible people. We want them to make a difference in the world, in their world. You know, we didn't pull them out of Russia because we wanted to save the world. We really felt God calling us to adopt these particular kids. So we just love them, and we just want them to be good people, to grow up to be good people.
In turn, what have these 9 young Russian adoptees taught you, Lori Adams?
They've really helped me to grow up a lot, and they've really taught me a lot about patience. And there's a lot of things, you know, a lot of patience that I'm still struggling with now. You know, they've taught me how to let go and let God take over when I can't control the situation. So it has been an unbelievably amazing journey for me. I have no regrets on adopting any of them, even though sometimes things didn't turn out the way I thought they would. But I have no regrets. I'm so thankful that I've met these kids and that I've taken the risk and that they've taken the risk and that we've spent the time that we've spent together. Because really, you know, you really only have your children for as long as they're in your household. I mean, that's the time that you have to really mold them into what the people that you want them to be. And with many of our kids, they came, you know, 14, 15 years old. They were pretty set. So we had just a few years to smack them with as much values as we possibly could and hope that some of it sticks, you know.
You talked about surrendering.
Yes.
Let go and let God.
Absolutely. You
have
to.
Very hard for all. How did you learn to do that?
Through trials and tribulations, through pain, you know, when there's nothing else for you to do, when there's nothing else you can do, you just have to say God is in charge. And, you know, ultimately I think, you know, if there's a traumatic situation or a terrible situation that happens within the household or within the kids' lives or family, I try to think God is in charge. It's part of his ultimate plan. I cannot question it, because 10 years from now, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows, you know, things might be better. Things might be so much better than they are at the moment of the trauma. You know, so I just try to always have faith that, you know, he is ultimately in charge, and he is.
When we come back, we'll ask Lori Adams about the 2 very different lives she leads concurrently. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Lori Adams, mother, singer, songwriter, author, just a Super Bowl winning mom.
I wear a lot of hats.
You really have 2 very different lives.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the stage, it's the glitz, the glamour. You're in gowns. You're a diva.
A diva? I don't know. You should ask the guys in the band about that. I hope
you're
not.
You're a diva.
I hope
then not. Then you go home to the depths
of domesticity. That's right. The deep, dark depths.
How do you go from one to the other?
Oh, it's fun. It's really neat to have dreams and challenges. You know, just because you have children doesn't mean that your dreams stop. And if it's anything I want to teach my kids, especially my daughters, you need to always be challenging yourself. You need to set goals for yourself. And I love being a mom. I love having a lot of kids. I love that. It's the most important job I'll ever do, but it's not the only thing I'm going to do. So it's fun. I love being on stage with the guys in the band.
If there's a couple listening tonight, Laurie Adams, mm-hmm. to us, mm-hmm. who have been considering adoption and they can't jump over the edge to do it,
mm-hmm.
what do you say to them?
I would say to them, open your heart to the possibility. Just be open to it. And think about it. Do some research. Talk to people that have adopted. Read my book. Because my book is about opening, you know, my heart opening to the whole experience. And look what happened. Look what happened after I opened my heart. We adopted many, 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 many more. And as a result of me just talking about it, 28 kids have found a family with other families, just as a result of talking about it. So the reason that I wrote the book is I really would like to plant the seed in other people to just be open to the idea of allowing a young person into their lives, whether it be through adoption, through a mentoring program, or something. Because youth is our future. Absolutely.
But don't let your husband go to Russia alone.
No, don't let them go to Russia alone.
That could be a country western song, huh? How do we learn more about Laurie Adams, the book, etc.?
Well, I do have a website that you can visit. It is www.laurieadams.net, and that's LORIADAMS.net. You can purchase my book from my online store. You can also get my book at a local bookstore in my hometown, which is in Monroe. It's called The Book Nook, and their phone number is 734-241-2665.
You're known as Miss National Anthem. You've sang that song thousands of times.
I have.
What does that song say to Laurie Adams?
You know, I'm honored to be able to sing the National Anthem. When I sing the National Anthem, it takes me usually a minute, 10 seconds. I sing it the way it was written. I have total respect for our national song, as I have total respect for our flag. I have total respect for our military and our government. And one of the things that really irks me like no other is when I hear people sing that song and they change it up to make it their very own rendition. I think it is a reflection of our country, and I think that we should absolutely respect it. And that's one of the things that my father taught me early on when I started singing it when I was a teenager. And I still sing it today the way it was written. I think that could be why I've had so much longevity with the Tigers. You know, I've been consistently singing for them for a long time.
You wrote Fresh Paint, mm-hmm. Memoir of Adoption, mm-hmm. because of the two infants.
Correct.
How did you come up with the name Fresh Paint?
Well, when I was thinking about them, I was repainting the baby's room. Wasn't sure what color to use because I didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl. After I did find out about the baby's existence, I would often go into that room, the decorated room, the freshly painted room, and I would sit in the rocking chair and I would think about them. And I remember thinking to myself, I have no idea what they look like, who they are, what they're going to be, but the first thing is we're on the same planet. We live and exist on the same planet, and that's a start. So I just entitled the book Fresh Paint because it's a fresh start for them, it's a fresh start for us, for our family, and that's where I was, in their room, with fresh paint, thinking about them constantly.
Another common theme in this show is self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
How have you tried to give these 11 children self-esteem?
So many of my kids have been so love-starved most of their lives. It is amazing when you can just give love, give affection, give positive energy to someone, and you see them respond. For me, that is like a drug. I absolutely love that. I love to love on my kids and love on people so that they can feel better. They can feel that affection, that love coming through. And that's what I'm all about.
You've had to learn to let a son and daughter fail time after time.
Mm-hmm.
How have you done that?
Letting go, letting God, you know? One of the things that we do in our household is because so many of our children come from a situation where they don't know what's coming at them. They come from abuse, they come from neglect, they don't know what's going to happen next. So we need to really make sure that it's a very stable environment, secure environment. So what we do is we say, if you do this, this will happen. You know, this is going to be the consequence if you do this. So, and we have to follow through on that consequence. They don't always like it, but they know it's going to happen.
You're starting a new project entitled State of Faith.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'm working on a musical project. I've been singing professionally for a long time, and I just now started playing my guitar. I'm probably in second grade on the instrument, and I'm doing some really inspirational songs that I've always loved to do. So I'm working on that project. It's going to be called State of Faith.
Last question, Miss Adams.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Young people, I think the advice that I would probably give to you is, when you get older and you are looking back on your life and you've lived your entire life, the only thing that you're really going to be able to take with you to the grave is your memories. So my advice to you is to, when it's all said and done, the most important thing is how much love you gave away. So make as many memories as you can, love as many people as you can, and give as much love away as you can, because that's what really matters in the end.
Lori Adams, you are love.
Thank
You're
you.
An inspiration to many, many people. And there was a man that died a couple weeks ago in Birmingham, John Callahan, 18 children.
Wow.
91 years old.
God bless him.
So you're doing the same thing.
Mm.
Thanks for coming on. Keep it up.
Thank you for having me.
Our guest next Sunday will be the chairman and CEO of a company entitled General Motors, Rick Wagner. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spot.